Pop quiz, hotshot. Who do you think is the most powerful group of people in the United States? Time's up. It's old people. You want to know why? Because old people are the only folks who vote in all these boring elections that happen between presidential contests. Do you know what old people want to change? Nothing. Do you know what scares old people? Everything new or different. Now, I love old people. They're always there with the hard candy and whatnot, but when it comes to issues of social and political import, I'll bet you and grandma see things a little bit differently. Because people our age don't vote, old people get to choose state and municipal lawmakers. These are the offices that end up deciding crucially important things, such as who gets access to healthcare and who gets to vote in the next big election. Boring elections are incredibly fast and easy to vote in because no one's there. And because turnout is so low, your vote will have a huge impact. You'll be doing what's best for everybody by going to vote411.org and finding out when the next boring election is and where you can vote. That's vote411.org. Tell them Xerxes sent you.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Stop whining. Just jump in the tub.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another great, amazing episode of this podcast. And we're doing a game that you might not have heard of, but it's an interesting one. It's Drowned God Conspiracy of the Ages, which was nominated by...
Oh, look, we didn't write that down. Let's have a look, see if we know who nominated this. Was it someone in this conversation, or was it...
I don't think so.
It's a conspiracy.
Oh. Yeah, the conspiracies. Oh, okay. So it was nominated by @Phobos_Fornomaly. So that's anomaly with a 4 instead of an A, I believe.
Okay.
So
that is hacker alias there.
I got to tell you, Phobos Fornomaly is basically the person who would nominate this game. There is no better name combination for someone who would nominate Drowned
Unless
God.
It's like Anarchy Max or something with like a couple... numerals thrown in there. This game was developed by Epic Multimedia Group and published by Inkscape, or was it developed by Inkscape and published by
I think that's correct. I think it's an Inkscape game, isn't it? Wait, no, Inkscape. Well, all right. Inkscape did a Bad Day at the Midway, right? So
okay.
I'm getting thrown around in a loop here.
Yeah, doesn't really matter. They both no longer exist. So piece, I think it's a Windows 95 joint. I think that was what it was out for originally.
It runs
it was
Windows a DOS 95.
Game. Yeah. It came out in 1996 at some point in that year, and that's all we know. So who do I have here with me to talk about Drowned God Conspiracy of the Ages?
Well, I've been Carl.
I'm Tex Lopam.
Yeah, we have a special
cool.
guest. Yeah, we got an extra special guest who wrote a bunch of stuff about this one. He's like an expert, actually, so he's going to put us all to shame, hopefully.
Hello. Sorry, I was trying to figure out my mic. Hello, I'm Phil Salvador from the Obscuratory. Hi.
Please visit his website, because it's better. It's so good.
Yeah.
If you
Google Drowned God Conspiracy of the Ages, I think his site is probably one of your site, Phil, is probably one of the first things that comes up.
Oh, Jesus.
unless you've somehow completely trashed your like search like analytic thing, so it just sends you like nonsense. Drowning gods, how to?
If you got the drowning god fetish, where it's like, well, I think, oh, Hermes, you are drowning so good.
I think there's something in Game of Thrones called the Drowned God, because that comes up a lot too, when you...
Yeah, that came up a lot. Yeah, that was like, that's like the Pirate Island people.
Ah, damn it, that would ruin it. Now you can't find Drowned God.
So to be clear, this is not a Game of Thrones adaptation.
If you enter Conspiracy of the Ages, the full and correct title, you still get the conspiratory as your, maybe not first, but among the first hits.
Okay, so yeah, you have to type the full name, Drowned God, Conspiracy of the Ages. What the heck is a conspiracy of the ages? This is a very strange thing in terms of presentation.
So here's what I was able to gather, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it involves aliens, because there's one on the cover of the game.
Yeah, and it's a Roosevelt alien.
Yeah, so it's like, it's got, yeah,
gray.
It's very X-Files looking. Yeah. And then it also involves a lot of conspiracies, but they're like they're super complicated, like ancient kind.
They're like the fun, cutesy conspiracies from the 90s, like aliens built the pyramids while they were here from an alternate dimension looking for space bugs.
This is the pre-Alex Jones era, like the much kinder, gentler conspiracy theorist era.
Well, I think it's
Knights Templars, Area 51. So if you went to your conspiracy discount shop, then that's what they would have on offer.
What we're trying to say here is, if you've ever been to the Denver International Airport, you might... No, just kidding. All right. Yeah, Phil, what were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, I think it owes a lot to, honestly, the popularity of the X-Files. I mean, because there was a lot of that in the 90s. There was that. There was like that one fake alien autopsy video that became a big thing. And it seems to be kind of riffing on that sort of just first, thirst for, again, like fun conspiracy theory, not like, you know, undermining global government type stuff, but like just the sort of like, oh, what if everything's actually aliens? And it's just kind of elaborating on that to an extreme direction, which is fun.
It's certainly like the game starts up and you're like in a room, a place. I know it gives you a name, but it's very hard to discern like some of the words that are spoken to you, because it's got a lot of synthesized vocoding kind of on all of the characters' dialogue that show up. And then you get like a bunch of astrology and star sign and like fated numbers stuff. Like it really like overloads you immediately with just noise.
Like, it's doing like the Nostradamus type thing. Hey, we got to talk about what kind of game this is first. I think we're putting the
cart
before the horse here.
You'd know, 1996, a PC game full of conspiracies. It's a point and click first person adventure game.
Yeah, it's essentially Myst, but with more aliens.
And the puzzles are a little bit, like, they're not really Myst-like puzzles, really.
But yeah, like, I mean, it's basically Myst with Seventh Guest. Like, it's very Seventh Guest-ish, but the puzzles themselves, thankfully, take place across a span of rooms or screens, rather than Seventh Guest, which was like, here is a singular screen and a really, like, kind of boring logic puzzle and nothing's connected. Whereas this one does have that Myst-like, you move around areas and you try and, like, solve different bits and pieces, and then those like kind of open up other things. But there is an inventory as well, so you are unfortunately juggling some inventory crap, which means it is a bit easier to get lost, I think.
What? Yeah, the puzzles are essentially, there's two kinds. They are the more elaborate traditional puzzles, and the other half are stuff like connect the dots or click the buttons in the right order so they all light up. So they're the more Seventh Guest-ish puzzles.
So what's the game's rationale for like hiding the secret conspiracy mysteries get hidden behind a bunch of like Professor Layton puzzles? Like what's the rationale for this? Like, or is there one?
I don't think there really is. I think they find there's sometimes they have justification. Like there is one part in, there's a section that takes place in, I think, what is ostensibly Camelot, and there's a part where you have to challenge I assume was like the last Knight Templar to some sort of board game, and that at least has some sort of basis in being like, you know, challenging death in the Seventh Seal, something like that. But then there's a part where you go in ancient Egypt into a pyramid, and there's just like a giant game of Nine Men's Morris, and it's like, what? It's a really the setting's super well.
Yeah,
I don't think there really was much justification given towards why certain puzzles were and weren't rooted in the environment.
Well, because ostensibly,
it feels like a very wild mix. I think they had a ton of ideas and they just threw everything together.
There's a lot of lore in this, right? It's like, wasn't it originally going to be like a novel or something? And
I mean, I think so. Yeah.
My understanding is I'll be honest, I didn't get through to the end of this one, but my understanding is this one was most meant to be like a multi-part series, right? And this was the only one that came to fruition. Is that correct?
That's a good question. I was trying to think about this. I honestly don't even know where it would go. It does end on sort of a cliffhanger of sorts in which you meet the aliens, but then the game just kind of stops. I assume there would be some continuation, but given that the game is almost this, like, stream of consciousness, and there's aliens, and it's Egypt, then we're in Area 50, just jumping around, I have no idea where it would go from there. But I think it was the developer had created some, like, fake manuscript about aliens or something and was adapting it into a game, so he may have had ideas about where it was supposed to go from there, but it's not entirely clear.
That's interesting. So they're like, you found the Nine Man's Morris in the pyramids that we left you? Huh? What do you think of that, Earthling? Yeah. Alien from space.
I think it's not entirely clear sums up this game quite nicely.
It's very unclear whether it's supposed to be like a dream or if it's somewhat in a real space, because obviously nothing here is connected outside of dream logic. You know, there's like severed torsos just hanging out, like giant floating monsters, and like you going like teleporting through Stonehenge for some reason, and then
that's got to be involved. Yeah, it's a given.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. You just go there, and obviously
how did those rocks get there? Had to be alien. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, ancient man could never move a rock. That's physically impossible.
They'd have to drag it or something. Like, who does that?
You couldn't drag a rock? That's impossible. It's heavier than a man. That
would require literally dozens of men. They didn't have those kinds of resources. And ropes. They didn't make ropes. I mean, they made ropes, but not, you know.
Not rope ropes.
Not the way you and I would think of a rope, I think.
It's like, funny, though, that you... Oh, sorry. Please go on.
No, go ahead. Definitely, Phil.
Oh, I think what's interesting, you said dream logic. I think what's fascinating is it seems to be relying on, like, conspiracy theory logic, that for the game to make any sense at all, you have to buy into this idea of this, like, global conspiracy theory that, like, you know, you're in Da Vinci's lab and he has, like, drawings that have aliens in them, and it's like, of course this is connected to this other random alien drawing I saw.
So the conspiracy is just that there are aliens and they're chilling out somewhere.
It's weirder. It's like aliens, like, laid the seeds for all life on Earth. There's one part where
that movie. That was not good. We gotta stay away from that movie.
That's like one of the, like, oldest science fiction tropes in the book. But yeah, go.
It's weird because they tie it to, like, existing, like, religions and mythologies. Like, they tie in, there's a part where you find an alien corpse, and it seems to be implying that that is actually, like, the ark from which all life came, like Noah's Ark, and they bring in, like, Osiris was actually an alien, and they just find ways to connect, like, every human mythological story is actually about the aliens coming to Earth.
So it's all kind of probably based heavily on that book from the 60s or 70s, The Chariots of the Gods, which is all about a German guy who couldn't believe that primitive Egyptians could build the pyramids because, I mean, they weren't Europeans, and we all know, like, I mean, come on. Like, are we supposed to believe that these Egyptians did this? It's nuts.
It's definitely, like, a yes and on every conspiracy theory. It's like, and then aliens built the pyramids. Yes. And they also, it was King Arthur. Like, yeah, great. And they just keep building
every, on it. Every single thing that cannot be substantiated is somehow, it's all connected. It reminds me of? It's like, I think it was maybe at least loosely inspired by the Illuminatus trilogy, which was written by, I think, two authors, like, in the late 70s. And that's exactly what that series of books is. It's like a very tongue-in-cheek attempt to, like, weave every possible conspiracy theory into some, like, maximum theory that involves literally everything.
Oh, what's bigger than one conspiracy theory? All of the conspiracy theories in the same conspiracy.
It's the conspiracy of the ages.
That's the entertainment aspect of that whole 90s X-Files thing. It was like, if you talk to real conspiracy theorists, number one, don't. But number two, you'll soon realize that they actually have no greater contempt than they hold for other conspiracy theorists who don't believe in their particular conspiracy. They talk about those people like we talk about them. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Because they're
unbelievable.
Wrong. You know, like, the one conspiracy is the correct conspiracy. Every other conspiracy can't possibly be, like, right.
I think 9/11 was an inside job. So do I, dude. That's awesome. High five. I think it was the lizard men. You were the biggest idiot I have ever met.
It's like, a bit of a...
It was clearly the Atlanteans. It was clearly the Atlanteans. In conjunction with the reverse vampires and the Rand Corporation. So
attack talk.
Yeah, I think this game transcends that a little bit because, as we've said, it combines all the conspiracy theories, and I think what the end result is actually more complicated than just building the damn pyramids yourself with no aliens. But at least it does try to be a little bit creative with it. But I think it suffers a little bit from the fact that it just adds everything. Like the AdSec level, we mentioned that also has a submarine for some reason.
Well, that's actually a separate conspiracy. That's like the Philadelphia experiment, the theory that they were trying to make.
Oh, that
some
one was the invisible
game.
Ship?
Yeah, exactly.
The invisible battleship? Oh,
so which is another
thing. Connect. Okay, I take that back immediately. So now it's true and all makes sense.
It's interesting because we dealt with some of this stuff when we were talking about 999, nine persons, 9 hours, 9 doors, because that deals it does a lot of similar stuff. But it's in that game, it's much more like the things that the writer of the game was particularly interested in, and it's never entirely clear how legit any of it is. But what about the puzzles in this game? My understanding about this game is that it has a pretty good reputation for like puzzles, at least for its time. Like the puzzles could be really.
I think they're a bit mixed. I think they do benefit from the fact that a lot of them are, as Carl mentioned, Seventh Guest style puzzles that are just one screen. And it's like a puzzle where you've got these 12 rocks and you need to make all of them glow by clicking them in a certain order. And you have to play this Extinguish the Flames game against the Knights Templar. So those games, those puzzles aren't too
horrible,
bad.
By the way. That one
yeah, the problem is, so the problem is the Knights Templar, he cheats during the first round. You can't win that. You always lose. Also, the Knights Templar, he looks like Andros. He looks like he does. He looks like an orangutan with third degree burns. I don't know whether that was intentional or just mid-90s horrifically
like
animated human.
One of those like terrifying people from the Edgar Allan Poe game. You remember like the claymation like clay bits? It looks like one of those. But I mean the whole point of the I don't know how many other humans there are in it, but I love his like clearly like a desiccated skeleton person kind of look like he is immortal or something.
He's like the Knights Templar from The Last Crusade.
Yeah.
If you wait another 500 years.
Yeah, yeah. He's really bored.
Yeah, so he's just challenges you to a game of death while laughing his ass off. It's pretty, like, a bit unnerving that bit. But the thing that I hated about that puzzle is I believe that puzzle is randomized in the sense that I think the very last phase of that puzzle, so phase 3, I think he can place the cup that you have to use on a square that means he wins, which is really mean.
That's true.
Because it basically means you don't know if you're failing it in some way, and then you have to, like, do I do something different? Am I supposed to get an item to kind of trick him? But no, it's just you got to kind of keep reloading and shuffling around and just trying to
It's a little bit easier than that. What you can do is you can just wait until he puts down the chalice and you can just walk away.
Yes.
Walk back to the table and then the puzzle's reset. And the puzzle is, it's also one of the puzzles that the manual gives you hints for. So the manual has a couple of hints, even though some of them are wrong and actually make the game more difficult. I don't know if that was a mistake or on purpose, but theoretically the manual helps you out a little bit.
I assume, again, like, yeah, this game is a little odd. Do the puzzles remain strong throughout the game? Because I found that definitely, there's clever puzzles in there, which does separate it from quite a few of the other missed clones. But obviously, if you get stuck, then you're in a lot of trouble. You have to run off to a guide, basically. There's no way around that.
Yeah. So the puzzle that seems to come up a lot in when this game gets discussed at all is the one where you're like you're trying to figure out a conversation.
The Einstein Newton puzzle that was so bad.
So they're like. It's like you get a bunch of scrambled dialogue that's between these two heads, like scientist heads. And
it's between Einstein and Newton, yeah.
Yeah. So, and you got to like organize it into a conversation that makes sense, I guess.
Yes. That's right.
Makes sense.
I like that puzzle in the sense that you don't really, the problem is you don't realize it's actually like a full puzzle because it doesn't really make it clear that it's actually a puzzle rather than a weird room. Until you
sort of.
I mean,
you can pay attention to the apple.
Yeah, I mean, like the hint in that one is the apple and the chalkboard, and both of those make it actually really clear what's going on. But you gotta kind of fudge around a little bit, and that's actually one of the things that makes this game, I think, very confusing. Is that Whereas something like, you did mention 999. 999 is set very firmly in the real world, but crazy. Like, you know, like, oh, right. It turns out these strange things that we're talking about actually happened or are actually real. And there is, like, psychic emanation between people and stuff. And it's like, oh, but the rest of everything is real. Whereas, of course, in Drowned God, Conspiracy of the Ages, it's just completely crazy. Like, you can go through a door, and that door just... it puts you back at where you were, and nothing, like, this game is not set in, like, reality, even though ostensibly it is a bunch of conspiracy things that are all connected. The game itself is actually a highly surrealistic game, which can be quite difficult to, you know, like, sort of pin down whether the puzzle is based on something that's realistic, or whether it's actually, like, just some insane, like, dream puzzle, you know, whereas obviously Myst, again, I think everything in Myst is very firmly based in reality, even if Myst has, like, you know, teleporting books and stuff. All of the puzzles are realistic-ish, so you
yeah, the idea is, like, most of the puzzles are, like, mechanical in nature. It's, like, by doing this and this and this, this will open that, you know.
Yeah,
like, you could replicate large parts of Myst in a Myst theme park.
I think you cannot make Myst Escape the
worst theme park ever.
There. This is a tangent, but there briefly almost was a Myst theme park.
Really?
There is an island at Disney that was briefly a, like, zoo park that they abandoned, and they considered turning it into a Myst park, but by the time they did, like, Myst was already, you know, several years in the past. That's
crazy.
A tangent, but...
they had, like, 10 years to do that, and they didn't do it. Yeah. Like, there was a big time when
how
you could have done
you
that.
I think
that's
also a conspiracy theory. I think they got bad reviews after they locked in some of the guests for 10 hours into a spaceship with piano.
Oh, yeah. God, I hate that puzzle so much.
After the first death, I think they had to kind of re...
Yeah, the first death on Myst Island.
You're not supposed to die in Myst.
That's it. But, you know, like... I mean, Pissed essentially was a joke about Myst Island being a theme park, basically. So, you know, you could bring that in, too. But the problem I have with this game, by the way, is the same problem I have with almost every Myst clone. And it is the same, like, structural problem where in Myst, you have, like, four different things that you can branch into four different places. And it's, you know, like, you can see a lot of Myst with only solving a handful of puzzles. And, you know, like, solving the arc of Myst, it does mean you have to solve most of the puzzles. But to see the world and most of the stuff and kind of get a feel for what's going on, you only have to solve, like, three or four puzzles that are even remotely complicated. Whereas, obviously, in Drowned God is, again, it's a linear game in a lot of ways. You have to, you know, you've got, like, I think it's, is it three or four main area, like, places that you visit? But
three and change, kind of.
And each one, you basically, you know, you have to solve... like, I they are kind of, like, slightly open inside the actual world, but you have to solve the entire one, then you go to the next one, and you got to solve the entire one, and then you got to, you know, so it's too, like, restrictive. Again, it's all about confounding you, and that's good in that you can't get, like, super lost, and I guess because this game is very, like, conspiracy, dreamy, it would probably get insane if you could just go wherever you wanted. But it does kind of mean that you get stuck and you get really hard stuck, and it kind of gets, like, frustrating if you know that you have to solve this puzzle to progress, but you have no idea how.
Yeah, I think for me, what this game lacked was a clear motivator to keep going. Obviously, you want to see what's happening, but every area is just a mashup of various things. Some of them do have a theme, like the Thurian world, which has Stonehenge. But there's always some sort of, like, weird room with gears, and then there's a random corridor with columns made of marble. But nothing really... I didn't really have the feeling, oh, I want to see what's over there. I want to go here.
Yeah.
I want to see what's behind that door. Because it's all just... it feels like random assets just thrown together.
It might very well be. I mean, I think the point of the game is just, like, you solve puzzles, and then you learn more of the story. And then you solve more puzzles, you learn a little bit more of the story. So, you know, getting to learn about how, like, Merlin and King Arthur were real, and they were friends with aliens. You know, and then you learn more about, like, yeah, Hitler was friends with aliens, or not friends with, I don't know. Like, what, you know, it just keeps
going. It's always back to the aliens. It's very
it does. It's a pretty straight line, you know. I mean, this is the same crap that you see in, like, Deus Ex. It's the same stuff that's, like, the mythos of Assassin's Creed, which the fact that series even has a mythos that people take seriously, it just blows my mind. I don't know. I mean, I guess it was really new and interesting in the 90s, but
I definitely say that in terms of, as we mentioned, like, X-Files actually had a pretty, like, couple of pretty good games, but I can totally see the general sentiment at the time, you know, like, ooh, aliens, and aliens did things. And so I can totally see this, like, buy-in, just like, yeah, aliens were behind everything, and that's the game. It's like, there's an alien on the box, and it's got a very evocative name. I love the name Drowned God. That's a really, like, I really want to know what Drowned God is about when I read the name.
What is it about? Is it the submarine?
I think it's specifically like one of the, I think it's the alien who's supposed to represent Osiris, who at one point you find in the tank of water. That what I found really compelling, because I know people are saying that this kind of thing comes up a lot in other games that are dealing with other sort of ufology type stuff. I think what I found really compelling was the intricacy of the mythology they're putting together. Again, we mentioned that it was, you know, like bringing in a bunch of different conspiracy worldviews and things like that. But just like when you go to, when you're in Camelot or Merlin's area or Da Vinci's Lab or whatever, and you find like these intricate books with like illustrations of aliens doing things, like they clearly put, I don't know if the developer Harry Horse was like the sole writer and director behind the game or if he had assistance, but the thought that he put into how he would connect everything together, it was clearly it seems to have been a labor of love in a really strange way, that it's all over the place, but in a way that seems kind of meticulous, and I found that compelling. It was like, this is going somewhere, and I want to keep playing to know what he's trying to do with this.
Yeah.
I found that interesting.
I think that's a good... should we... Anything else we got to say before we rank this one?
There's one thing I would like to say, is that I think the story is a bit... It can be compelling, but what I had trouble with was the dialogue, because that's also what I didn't really like about the Einstein and Newton puzzle. Like every piece of dialogue in this game is like, you are the one who stands before time, but you're also behind time, and you are time itself, as we all are. And it's just waffle.
I can't believe how close that is, like, accurate to the game. Like, that you could literally put that in one of the parts of the game, and I would...
It's really interesting. Yeah, for people who are, wanting to trace back the early works of Deepak Chopra, maybe he worked on this game.
it's just a ton of waffle, and I found all the dialogue very exhausting.
I guess, like, to an extent, it wants you to get it. Like, it really, like, it's one of those things that's, like...
It kind of has to be like this.
Yeah, like...
Because you can't deliver that with a straight face. So it has to be this pseudo-philosophical waffle all throughout the game, so...
But if you get the bust of Isaac waffle, Newton delivering it,
If I remember correctly, you get assigned, like, a number at the start. You have to write that down. Don't forget your number, or you'll be, like, screwed in one of the puzzles, because I think it revolves around, like, your number that you get at the start assigned to you during your personality test. So if you play the game, make sure you write down your personality test number, or you'll, that'll be a pain in the ass. But I think they're only, like, numbers 1 to 9, so I think you can just guess it. But I think I got 6, if I remember correctly.
You are so 6.
Thanks.
Your number, Cal.
And then it addresses you. I like that. I love it when games do that, where they, like... You know, it's like, you know, it gives you a personality test, and then it makes references to the thing that it's like, you know, trying to like hook you in by like acting like it knows you to an extent. I mean, that's kind of cool, especially I could see that, you know, really selling in like the multimedia era, which is the other thing that I would mention. Myst does like locational sound. This game just kind of does locational music-y atmosphere, but I still liked it. Like, there's a lot of, like, little bits of, like, music loops and sound samples and that kind of thing. And they like, work really well, I felt, like, in terms of each little room, a little area has its own unique sound and music feel to it. So you really do kind of, like, you know, like, even the little puzzles and the little areas, it's just like, oh, it's this place. You know, it helps build up a bit more of a sense of where you are, even if it kind of comes off as schizophrenic, but I think that's fine because very much the game is kind of crazy and very earnest about it being crazy. Like, it's not, it never kind of winks at the camera. It's just like, oh yeah, you're taking this seriously. I guess I need to.
I think it's like getting cornered by someone at a party who's high and they just ramble about just whatever they're thinking about.
Yeah,
but I think
exactly
that's great. I think like the music and the atmosphere, it's ominous and like dreadful and building towards something, but also kind of nothing. And getting swept up in that, I found to be extremely fun, even though it was just kind of, again, just a lot of things smashed together. There's, what's it, the manimals at one point. It's like this, I have no idea where, there's one part where there's like human animal hybrids who are like encoded into an alien corpse. I have no idea what the point of that was or where it was going with it, but it was fascinating. It was like, I want to learn more about the animals. I'm in on this. I will listen to you ramble. But if you were trying to leave the party, not great. Not necessarily.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, I think Xerxes, you wanted to try and rank this one. So we might as well get started, I think, at least.
We don't have to. We could just leave this a mystery. It'd be kind of fitting, right? Like, where did it go?
The ranking number is just like a tarot card.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be very appropriate for this title, but anyone know any astrology numbers that can be placed at?
And a five's probably important. Five?
Yeah, the question is this better or worse? Number five. They'll place it above Myst. I think we can't.
Oh, no, that's not even a question. Yeah. The real question is, where does it rank compared to Riven, I think?
Yeah, I was about to say that. So is it better or worse than Riven, the sequel to Myst?
I think it's better.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that, Riven actually really way too big. At least this game divides its areas so that you don't, as we have said, and I know we said it when we talked about Myst, and we definitely said it when we talked about Riven, this game does not have the pull a lever and somewhere in the game a door has opened, which kind of automatically, to an extent, makes it better than Riven. Sorry, but that's how it works. I mean, you play Myst, then you probably would. I would probably recommend this one before Riven. You know, like if you had to pick, I'd be like, well,
yeah. If you don't have like 2 years to blow on a game that goes nowhere, then maybe do this one.
Riven is one of my favorite games. I know you brought me on as a drawn god person, so I cannot quite abide this, but I'm also a guest in your house, so I'll allow you to place it above Riven.
Well, have you checked on our list? I don't know if we've actually provided the list to you, where we've basically we slander Riven a lot. So let's give you the numbers.
Long-term consequences.
Would have brought brass knuckles if I knew this.
So Riven is on spot 331. I'm not quite sure whether I would consider this to be better than Riven. I mean, then again, that might just be Stockholm Syndrome, because I did solve Riven without a FAQ, so there's that.
Like, I don't know if you solve Riven without a guide, I don't know if you get an opinion on Riven, because you're clearly too far gone in Riven.
That's also 4 months of my life I'm never going to get back, but...
Well, yeah, like, at this point, sunk cost fallacy, you have to defend Riven if you've played it all the way through without a guide. You're like, it's great, everyone should finish Riven, just... get through it. You'll get there eventually. I'm very impressed, by the way. This is why you're the king of these games as well, It's not easy to get through Riven without a guide. Would you say this one was easier than Riven?
Yes. But it's more compartmentalized, and the logic puzzles are ultimately not that difficult. Most of them can even be solved by just trying long enough.
I think that's an upside and a downside. I think it is something where the puzzles, when you get to trying to solve a puzzle on the back of a chair to open a door thing, it goes quickly, so even if it's a frustrating puzzle, you can at least move on with it at some point. But they are also a little disconnected from the environment in ways that you are just walking into a room and getting a puzzle like the Seventh Guest. So there's upsides and downsides to that approach.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Okay. Phil, were you able to get the list? I have linked to it.
Please send me that, because I don't think I have that. Oh, I see it right there in the chat. One second.
Just see if that opens. Sorry about this, but we'll get that. So
it's all good.
I guess what I like about this one, I really do like the weird ass like conspiracy stuff, because this game does something that pretty much mostly no other Myst clone does, and that is present a like really weird and interesting story in like a pretty cool way, like really capturing that like energy of the conspiracy, like aliens nuts of the 90s, X-Files-y stuff. This makes it like a really cool time capsule for that exact specific time period, whereas most other Myst clones were kind of either like poorly done surrealism or a bit mundane, like you're in a building and then you gotta go outside and get into the sewer, like wow, that's I really wanted to get there. But this one, like, you can, like, look at it and go, oh, yeah, this is cool stuff. What's going to happen next? What CG nonsense am I about to get thrown at me? Which, makes it pretty recommendable, even if I don't care for the puzzle solving myself all that much. But let's look at, we're in the upper 300 range. It's got Commander Keen, Episode 1 at 303. It's a PC game. Everyone's familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm looking at Revolution X here, not because it has really anything to do with it, but because it also has full motion video, so aesthetically there's a vague connection there.
Ooh, the pit. I like the pit. It's a 312. I guess this game, I don't think this really set the world on fire. Like, did people play this, or was this like a bit more of a, it came out, enthusiasts bought it, and then it just, you know, disappeared. That seems to be so. What happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was somewhat well received, but I think it had a couple of bugs, and it did get patches, but it never was patched to bug freeness. So I think the opinions kind of remain mixed from what I know.
It had a patch? Damn, I've been playing the unpatched version. Like
this has multiple patches. I think it has like 4 patches or so.
Really? I'm actually kind of impressed that they patched it that much.
Yeah, the patches are not that easy to get because those were obviously, well, not in the pre-internet age, but in the pre, I just downloaded my patch age.
Yeah, well, I mean, what it would have been, those patches would have been like on File Planet or something. They're gone forever. Okay. Well,
I think this is better than Infamous No Yakata.
You were on that one, right?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. But you have played that. I remember you mentioning that. This, so that's pretty good.
I have played that, but I wasn't on the episode. But I think it's better than Infamous No Yakata.
Okay. Well, I happen to really like Knights of the Crystallion.
Okay.
Which I did. I know I said Commander Keen, but that is 304, Knights of the Crystallion. I really like Knights of the Crystallion. But I'm not like feeling like strong sense that you guys really have like a position in mind for this one, I don't think.
I don't have any really strong opinions on most of the games in this area here.
I'm discovering your rating system in real time, so.
Oh, yes, the rating system. Yes. Please.
The rubric.
The 17 procedure.
In trustiness.
Yeah, like, please continue to believe that there is a method to the ranking system. And
much like Drowned God, if I believe there is some kind of logic behind all the madness, everything will sort itself out.
I definitely believe that we need to put Drowned God in a place that seems insane. That's the only reasonable position to put it. I'm looking through my list. I should say out loud what I'm looking at. 281 has LSD, the Dream Simulator, which is one of the closer things on the list to this. We also did have one of my favorites, Bad Day at the Midway at 253. I probably wouldn't put this one above Bad
253.
Day.
253. Yeah. 253. That's above Ogre Battle 64.
Yeah, I'm saying I wouldn't put it that high. I think that, you know, it's got to be. I try to find the upper limit so we can sort of get it into a place.
To be honest, I would put this as high as maybe Uni Racers.
That's
306.
306 is Uni Races, a game that is just okay. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's all right.
I think this one here is more interesting than Uni Racer, so I would put it above that. Uni Racer has just one interesting thing: it's a racing game with unicycles.
The most interesting thing about Uni Races is that I believe they were sued into oblivion by Pixar. So thanks,
really?
Pixar.
That's
bastards. Yeah, I believe a very early Pixar video that they produced was a animated unicycle, and they're like, "You can't have unicycles. Oh. We own animated unicycles," and they successfully got Uniraces taken off the shelves. That's a bit of game for you. It's a bit mean, you know, considering they're all about their lovable, you know, things, but not surprising from a company with the ownership that they had. Anyway, so Vendetta 305, better or worse than Vendetta?
I have no strong opinion on Vendetta.
Likewise. I was going to say, I will put Knights of the Crystallion above that, just because that game is so conceptually bold.
Yeah. We can just put it below Knights of the Crystallion.
All right, below Knights of the Crystallion, above Vendetta. Why? Listen to this episode in reverse, and the truth will be revealed to you. It's going at 305 above Vendetta and below Knights of the Crystallion.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GCNINX and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.